Welcome to the program for Thursday, April 19th, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We start today, as we always do on Thursdays, with industry chatter, and I'm pleased to welcome to our studio Kimberly Hayes of the Ambit Group. It's great to see you, Kimberly. Thanks for coming on the program today. Good to see. I guess the last time we saw each other was in Williamsburg at the conference down there at the end of October, so it's good to see you again. We always start with telling me a little bit about what your company does for federal customers.
Sure. Ambit Group is a management consultancy with expertise in strategic management and program management in the federal space. We typically run large programs that are enterprise-wide in nature and often transformational. You'll find our teams in the OCIO and in the Offices of Acquisition Management pretty much across the government, and we have new areas moving into supply chain management and transformation, obviously, with the focus now looking at the supply chain.
Mm-hmm. The supply chain is interesting because you may be the first, or certainly one of the first, people on this series to talk about the fact that you're specifically moving into that space or working in that space. Yeah. Is it just the fact that there is so much focus on it that's attractive from a business perspective, or does it fit with the portfolio that you already manage, or something else that makes that a space that you're doing business in now?
It really does fit in our portfolio, Francis. The interesting thing that we found in the supply chain is that there's so much focus on IT and IT operations and so much focus on acquisition management. But oftentimes the look back, if you will, at the supplier community, at that end-to-end process that we're procuring, how we're getting our services, whether they're products or consulting services or other solutions, and how much money is actually lost or gained, mm-hmm. and the effective management of that supply chain. For us, effective management is typically where we go, and leaning into the supply chain, there's just been not a lot of focus there.
Are your customers focusing on the supply chain because of things that are happening, events that are happening inside the organization, or is it normally Congress is telling us we have to pay more attention to this, or we know they're going to, and so we're going to?
I think we're fortunate, Francis. We have some very forward-looking clients. One of our largest programs around supply chain is with the Department of Veterans Affairs. Mm-hmm. As you know, I'm a service-connected disabled vet, and I'm very vested in seeing that products and services and goods that are delivered to our veterans are of higher quality, better services. So are our clients at VA. VA realized that the supply chain itself was where they would have the most control over improving those goods and services. And they've gone back, and much like DLA did many years ago, and put a focus on the supply chain and on driving improvement through the supply chain. So it's a natural fit with your acquisition organization. It's a natural fit with how IT runs, or in their case, cemeteries, healthcare, other services.
The focus on the supply chain lately has been primarily on the IT supply chain, but you're talking about some things there.
Correct.
That have nothing to do necessarily.
Absolutely.
With IT. And I wonder if a lot of folks, either on the industry side or maybe even on the agency side, are even thinking about some of those things as a supply chain issue or supply chain challenge potentially, or if that's maybe not even on people's radar screens yet.
I don't think it's on most people's radar. If you look at the spend of a large agency like VA, you realize that IT is a critical component by all means. And in our community, in the federal community, we oftentimes are looking at IT. But it really is the breadth of suppliers where you can find so many cost savings. You can find so much improvement in service delivery. And I do believe that most organizations have begun to look at their supply chain, but they're only looking at components.
Mm-hmm.
What we've been able to do with VA, and they have been a fantastic partner in this, is not only look at the components, but look at the end-to-end of the supply chain and look for cost savings across the entire supply chain.
What's the first step to trying to do that? Is it just an inventory of all your suppliers, or where do you begin that process?
Wow. You know, that's interesting. You have to understand who your suppliers are. You have to understand your mission, but you also have to understand the complexity of your mission. You know, in many organizations, again, we've had focus on simply looking at IT, or we talk about the lawn services that have to be procured. But how often do people actually look at, and in VA's case, they've done it quite well, look at the individual medical devices that are being bought, looking end-to-end across every service and attribute that comes into that enterprise. I think The challenge with looking at that enterprise as a whole is you have to understand it, and you have to be willing to take the time to do the assessment. In many agencies, people are looking for, in this market especially, looking for an immediate solution. And it does take a little bit of time to plan your work. You have to plan your work. You have to do your assessment. You have to find those target areas for savings and for control, and then you go after them. But if you don't first take that step to baseline and understand what it is that you're dealing with in your supply chain, you won't move forward.
When you sit down with a customer and look at a supply chain issue that they're having, what do you normally find that they're doing well, and what do you normally find that they're struggling with?
That's different everywhere. Mm-hmm. I would love to give one standard answer. I can't. I think that in organizations where acquisition and program offices are well integrated, they can tell you immediately what it is that they're buying, from whom they're buying it, and a level of performance. And when those organizations are not well integrated, I think that there's a divide that happens whereby what's being bought, you know, you can look at it and say, yes, I have procurement documents that say that we purchased X, but maybe we don't understand if X is the right thing for today, if X is of the best cost, how many of X are we buying across our entire supplier environment. It's that ability to have the program offices, the IT offices, the acquisition offices integrated so that you can really aggregate the entire supply and understand what it is that you're buying, what advantage you're getting out of it, and if you're getting the best of the goods and services.
You talked about what it looks like where program offices and acquisition offices are well integrated.
Yes.
What does that relationship look like to you as the vendor, yeah, but also to the people inside the organization?
Wow. When they're well integrated, it's clear. It's crystal clear. You know, the nice thing is that Ambit began looking at strategy management. Obviously, when we first came into the government, we were known for doing strategic planning. Well, guess what? The best strategies are ones that are clear and well understood. The best run organizations are one where everyone understands their roles, their responsibilities, and what it is they're expected to do to move the organization forward to achieve mission. So it's been very interesting for me to sit back and see as we're bringing in the new procurement officers, we're bringing in new IT professionals, we're bringing in others, and look at organizations that are taking the time to have those groups work together, to integrate them, to have them share language, to have them understand each other's roles and responsibilities and be clear on it. When that happens, the ability to more efficiently operate is just, it's exponential. There's no limit to it.
Are you seeing a lot of that, or are you seeing a lot of the other?
We see both. More and more, when you see an organization that talks about transformation, and again, I said earlier on that we do a lot of transformational programs, organizations that are typically using that phrase, the transformational approach, they're looking for ways to collaborate. They're looking for ways to integrate. So we tend to target those clients. Those are the ones that we want to work with, the ones that are forward-leaning. And we're going in with those organizations and saying, okay, great. So who's on first? What are we doing? Where are we going? And how are we going to do it? But, you know, the other thing about organizations like that is that they're also open to constructive feedback. And I didn't use criticism. Mm. They're saying, okay, I understand industry has some best practices. What are they? What can we take from those and put into the federal market? And, oh, by the way, we have best practices too. What can we do to move those along? So those are the organizations that are they're in lockstep in everything that they're doing. So we see them in industry. They're the ones that have very clear solicitations that are released. When an RFP comes out, we know what they're looking for. The measures are clear. The expectations are clear. You know what the timelines are, what the goals are, and how performance will be evaluated. There are more of them. They're growing.
When you talk about best practices and agencies recognizing their own best practices and looking to kind of mold them, for a long time, it seems to me as an outsider, it looked like agencies had theirs. There were these public Correct. Sector best practices and private sector best practices, and never the twain shall meet. Is that finally going away? Is each side recognizing that the other side's not completely anathema to what we're trying to do?
I definitely think it is. You know, on our supplier work, again, that we've been doing over at VA, one of the big pieces is going out through academia to identify best practices in industry and then look at how those practices can be molded to work within the federal environment. Here's the interesting thing. When industry comes in, they're also looking at some of the best things that government's doing. I think this world of I must be smarter than you has definitely gone away, and we're all now beginning to realize that we're in collaboration together. It's a partnership.
Mm-hmm. My guest is Kim Hayes of Ambit Group on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
This week's Experts in Health topic is Helping Your Child Sleep, featuring Dr. Brent Thibodeau, Chief of Pediatrics in Northern Virginia with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group and practices at the Kaiser Permanente Reston Medical Center.
Hi, I'm Dr. Thibodeau. As a pediatrician, many parents ask for tips on how to get their child to sleep through the night. The following will help you and your child to get a good night's rest. Create a quiet, dark sleeping area for nighttime and naps. Designate a consistent place and time for sleep. And finally, create a bedtime routine. Studies have shown that a consistent routine encourages faster sleep onset and fewer waking episodes. A bath and a book prior to bedtime are good examples. Wishing you and your family a good night's sleep.
Dr. Thibodeau was recently recognized as a top doctor in Washingtonian Magazine. To learn more about Kaiser Permanente's experts in health, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
The Federal Drive is sponsored by Learning Tree International.
Learning Tree International is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government. They provide high-quality instructor-led IT and management training to government professionals and contractors at all levels. Call 1-800-THE-TREE or enroll today at learningtree.com/gov. That's learningtree.com/gov.
The Federal Drive, brought to you by Learning Tree International, airs weekday mornings from 6 to 10 and online at federalnewsradio.com. The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
This is NIH Health Matters. I'm Joe Belinfi. A recent study in rats has shown that vitamin D reduces the size of fibroids, the most common non-cancerous tumors in women of childbearing age. But Dr. Louis DiPaolo at the NIH explains more study must be done.
The real importance of this is the possibility that there could be a non-surgical option, a fertility-sparing option. Remember, the only option to completely ameliorate the condition is hysterectomy,
which is the surgical removal of the uterus. For details, visit www.nichd.nih.gov. Health Matters is produced by the NIH, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
I'm Emily Kopp. Coming up on tomorrow's Federal Drive, the Defense Department says 19,000 sexual assaults happen in the military each year. We take a close look at new efforts to stop it with the Pentagon's point person, Air Force Major General Mary Kay Hertog. And we'll hear from the new head of the Recovery Board. Lots more, too, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest on Industry Chatter today is Kimberly Hayes of the Ambit Group. You mentioned in the last segment that there are a number of new people coming into some pretty critical positions in government. Among those are the program management officer position, the acquisition officer position, a lot of new IT people in government as well. As this new generation transitions in, what do you think the number one thing is that we should be keeping in mind, especially from an industry to government perspective in dealing with folks like this?
You know, they're coming in at all different levels, Francis. So there are new groups that are young, that are just out of college and being pulled into intern programs. for that group, we need to give them time to learn the mission and learn the job. They're not going to have the historical knowledge. And one of the things that I think we see in industry that does frighten me a little is when we push them too hard and too fast to manage programs that are of a level of complexity that they don't yet have the experience. And that's a risk from a few points. One, you know, you're going to burn them out, and we want them to stay. Two, you put them in a position of managing risks that they're not prepared to manage. And we don't do that in our own businesses. And of course, just because we don't have the capacity yet, we're hoping not to see that happen in the federal government itself. For those who are coming in from industry into those positions, they need time to be sure they know how the tone, the tenor, the temper of working inside the federal government, being able to know the pace of getting things done and how to drive their contractors. Also, that integral relationship we talked about earlier, they do need to be in lockstep with their procurement officers so that they don't break rules and find themselves in trouble when they shouldn't be. I think it's great to begin to see this back and forth transition of time spent in industry, time spent in government, this migration, if you will, of that knowledge going across both sides. We're in partnership, and there's no better way to have that happen than to have people migrate back and forth.
It's interesting that you mentioned the burnout factor, because mm-hmm. I hear from not just HR people, but right. from the superiors of these people, the managers of these people, in all skill sets across government. What's your biggest challenge with younger people or newer people in the workforce? They're not all young. And it's never training. It's never their skill set. It's never anything. It's retention. They're good, and yet I want to make sure that I'm doing something to keep them engaged and keep them here right. so that we can continue to develop this workforce.
Well, and that, as you just said, that is on both sides of the house. It's not just in the government. It's also in industry. You know, look, I think for a lot of a certain age, we grew up in this world where it's you're going to work a 60-hour work week if you move your way up and just deal with it. Well, we know generationally that this next generation doesn't react well to that. And frankly, most of us haven't reacted well to it either if you look at health and well-being. It's time to have a different dialogue about how we work and how we pull our teams together. You know, burnout is a huge factor. It's one that keeps me up at night as a business owner. It's one that I think about every day. How do I protect my teams from it? And we do live in a world of do more with less and be conservative and be efficient with your time. Yet how many of us have 500 to 600 emails in our inbox at any given point in time that we can't respond to?
Mm-hmm.
There has to be, I think, a conversation that goes into how we're going to operate programs and the strategy. One of our biggest strategic challenges is how are we going to keep our workforce able to do the job that we're challenging them with in a do more with less environment? And I think burnout is one of those things where we start on that. You know, do you give the younger folks fewer projects on their plate? Do they have projects of less complexity and more knowledge? Do you spread them across several other areas so they can have greater areas of knowledge and not be centric on one thing? Then they're more agile. They could drop into an IT program or into a healthcare program. Or do we get them specific around each of those? You know, these are conversations that every agency's having, and they're having them differently. They're going to have different solutions. For me, corporately, I'm looking at how can I give my teams the ability to be challenged when they go in and keep their minds engaged, keep them happy. They're not there to do rote drudgery work. They're there to really think about what they can do for their customers. And we ask ourselves every day, what has to come off our plate? And I'm not sure that many agencies get to do that. Most of my federal customers have four or five jobs on their plate at any given point in time. You know, on our side, we do a daily scrum call. What has to drop? What can you manage? What can't you do today? Maybe we need to look at helping our federal clients get some of that off their plate, too.
Just to answer your question, I have 654 things in my inbox right now. So I'm right in line with what you're talking about there,
Kim. How many are flagged red, Francis?
Not enough, I think. You used a term that is probably my least favorite term when it comes to dealing with issues inside the government, and that's more with less.
Oh, I hate it.
I'm so sick of hearing that, I have to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Are we getting maybe beyond that idea in government where people are saying, you know what, that's just not even realistic. Let's stop fooling ourselves and let's understand what we can accomplish that comports with the mission of the agency, and let the stuff drop that can't. It kind of in line with what you're talking about.
I think we are, Francis, and I think that all begins with the leadership from the top down. If a CIO is going to work 24/7, never stop and push their teams constantly, that's not going to happen. But if that leader, whether they're a CIO or an acquisition manager or a program manager on a major initiative, is willing to have that conversation with their people, you know, what's critical today? What do we have to do? One of the things that we're finding that helps teams accomplish this is the regular assessment approach. You know, being able to double check where are we on a regular basis. You and I were chatting earlier, and I said about every 90 days we check against progress. We're not waiting 6 months, 12 months, 2 years to see if we've made progress. We're checking in a periodic fashion and iterating what's working well, what's not. Where are we getting stretched? You know, you can't do more with less at some point. At some point, you just have to do.
Yeah. And in that case, it seems everybody's going agile, if you want to use the term. I mean, that's, you can talk about it in terms of particular types of programs and whatever. But from that perspective, mm-hmm. there's a tremendous level of accountability all across government, it seems to me, that wasn't there before, that as far as when you're going to get measured and how you're going to get measured.
Well, and we've seen these programs across government. Obviously, everyone's familiar with PMAS over at VA and looking for accountability in a different way. One of the uniquenesses of some of the programs, though, is they're not just saying, oh, you contractor, I'm going to beat up on you. That's not the case. They're saying we're in this together. So the accountability is coming in on both sides. Contractor, if you're missing your deadlines, you're going to hurt me. And if I'm not giving you what I need, I'm going to hurt you. So we have to do this together. I think that we're in an environment now where transparency and accountability are no longer concepts, they're expectations. So we have to manage agilely. We have to manage in a way that we can prove that we're doing what we need to do, because, frankly, the taxpayers are watching to see if we are.
You mentioned VA. Roger Baker's been on the show mm-hmm. a number of times, and we've talked about PMAS. Right. And the difference between what he's doing and then what the blank stat, fill in the blank sessions have turned into at OMB, and the way accountability seems to have worked either public sector or private sector in the past, is there doesn't seem to be any blame game or maliciousness involved. It's not, I don't like you, so we're going to kill your program. It's, hey, it's not working out. Nothing against you. Business is business, and that's the end of it, if that's what needs to happen.
Well, I mean, Francis, let's be honest. Not every organization is a fit with every company. Not every company is a fit with every organization. And I think that it's okay to have that dialogue. It's okay to say, you know what? Maybe we bid on something and the requirements were so poorly defined that we got ourselves in trouble. Or maybe we bid thinking one thing and it turned out to be another. You know, there are any number of reasons. I think what we have to do is not have the blame game. We have to have the measure game.
Mm-hmm.
How far are we going to get? What are we after? How are we going to get it? Did we get there? You know, it's that plan, do, execute model. Make sure that you've got your plan in place. You're doing what you're supposed to do. You're executing, and then measure it. You know, did report it.
We've talked a lot about the relationship on a project with the vendor and the acquisition mm-hmm. team and the program management team, the people that execute. Right. I want to dig into that relationship a little bit more when we come back. My guest is Kim Hayes of Ambit Group on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Our conversation on industry chatter continues in just a moment.
Disabled American Veterans is dedicated to one single purpose, building better lives for America's disabled veterans. May 18th through the 20th, in the company of the vintage B-25 Mitchell Bomber, DAV brings its message of support for veterans to the Joint Base Andrews Air Show. In its modern-day mission with DAV, the B-25 serves as a reminder of the sacrifices veterans make for freedom. Meet the DAV flight team with the B-25 at the Joint Base Andrews Air Show.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why. For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
Here at Best Buy, we have expanded our selection of HD Radio car stereo receivers. New HD Radio car stereos are in store and offer you the best in digital entertainment and information. More music from local HD2, HD3 radio stations, iPhone, iPod control, digital traffic, iTunes tagging, and more. Best Buy has the leading brands, Alpine, Pioneer, Kenwood, JVC. Lots to choose from, with prices as low as $120. Here at Best Buy, we recommend HD Radio technology.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
By combining HP 3PAR utility storage with HP ProLiant Gen 8 servers powered by the latest Intel Xeon processors, you can lower your total cost of ownership and improve project ROI. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how HP can power your data center into the future. Call GovConnection's experienced federal team, where service and commitment to the customer are priority one. Call 800-800-0019 today.
Mom's Ecstasy, Baby's Problems. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss. With HHS HealthBeat, ecstasy is among the most widely used drugs by young people, so some pregnant women are users, and a study indicates the drug may affect the fetus. At Case Western Reserve University School of Medicine in Cleveland, Lynn Singer looked at data on 96 pregnant women in England and their babies at birth and at 4 months. She says heavy ecstasy users were more likely to have babies who didn't meet development milestones for such things as coordination and balance.
The data so far suggests to us that there are effects of ecstasy that are harmful to the developing fetus.
The study in the journal Neurotoxicology and Teratology was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
The job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview.
Yeah.
And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Kimberly Hayes, president, co-founder of the Ambit Group. And we talked a little bit in the last segment about the relationship between the program management team, the acquisition team, and the vendor on some of these projects. And I can't really even hold it up for the microphone because it's hard to see through the radio. But I've drawn these Venn diagrams, which I didn't know until I did it. You're a big fan of. And, you know, I did it on a piece of paper, so I can't even post them, get them posted at federalnewsradio.com. But the first one is what my estimation of the typical relationship is among those three groups. And the vendor and the acquisition team are pretty well overlapped. And then there's just a real tiny amount of overlap with the program management team. Is that a fair estimate of what historically you've been used to seeing, whether it's the projects your company works on or others?
I actually would probably reverse that. During the procurement cycle, the vendor and the acquisition team are, you know, obviously the acquisition's out, you're interfacing, you're doing your response. And then it seems like, and historically, once the program's launched, the acquisition team in some cases goes away and you're dealing with the program team. It doesn't work so well all the time. You need those three components at the table. The organizations that we're seeing now who are using integrated project teams, the IPT approach, are integrating the various components of their organization, whether it be the IT PM, an operational PM, the acquisition organization. Sometimes it's the IG's in. You know, you just never know who you're going to have sitting at the table. But they're looking at how each of the stakeholders gets their interest and their needs heard in the process of driving the program. Now, for a while, we saw that only in the pre-acquisition phase. Now we're seeing it in the delivery phase as well, where these IPTs stay throughout the life of the project. They become almost an advisory board to the project. And when that happens, wow, it's just an amazing thing to see the ability of programs to progress through. One of the challenges we talked about earlier was obviously having acquisition stay agile along with development and management that is attempting to be agile. Well, guess what? When your CO is at the table and they're given a voice, it's much easier to remain agile. They don't feel excluded or as if something's been kept from them. They're brought in as a part of the team. And those are the organizations, I think, where you do see the large cost savings and the improvements in projects, cost avoidance in some cases.
Okay, so the white noise in that environment historically mm-hmm. has been the acquisition person is still involved and the program manager's going, what's he doing here? He doesn't know anything about this stuff. This is my deal. Fiefdom.
Tell me how to manage this.
Exactly,
I got it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What helps to make that mentality go away, and what helps to make people open to the fact that, you know what, this person might be able to contribute something, or it's beneficial. Seems to me it would be tremendously beneficial for the acquisition professional to be involved in the way that you're talking about, so that the next time they do an acquisition, they can use that what they've learned on the execution part of it.
I actually believe it's been top-down vision that's changed that. And I know that may sound a little odd, but, you know, we have some interesting leaders right now in government and in industry, and they're asking for things to be done differently. To the point you made a few minutes ago, everyone is tired of the phrase of do more with less. You just can't. Mm-hmm. So we better do it different. And now we have people who are saying, look, you know, why are we at odds? How are we going to manage this different? So there is a new push in leadership to integrate their teams and keep everyone at the table. You know, we talk about the right solution, the right product at the right time. Well, guess what? It's easy to get right when everyone who needs to be involved is sitting there making the decision and not being excluded. And it saves cycles.
It does away with what I hear over and over again having happened in the past, which is, as we talked about during the break, it's delivery time and the end user gets a hold of something and goes, I thought it was supposed to do this.
Exactly.
And everybody kind of slaps their heads and that's the end of that. Yeah.
But it is. It does do away with that.
What will spread that more? Is it just the leadership that you're talking about?
I think it's leadership. I think it's knowing that it can be successful. We need to tell those stories. We need to make sure people understand how the process works. You need processes that are easily replicatable. You need to know that this isn't someone's half-baked idea, that this is something that we can repeat and we can repeat often. You also need to be willing to adapt it for the environment that you're in. You know, if you're working in a high secure environment versus a civil agency that maybe doesn't have the security requirements, you may need to make some tweaks to that, and that's okay. But I do think that leadership has to say you will, you shall. You can't have an Office of Acquisition Management, a CIO, and a secretary not enforcing it. Everyone has to say, you guys are going to work collaboratively. And guess what? As contractors, we have a responsibility in that too. We have to do what we're supposed to do. We have to be communicative. We have to be open. We have to be honest about things. We have to bring innovations to the table as well and be willing to do that. Sometimes that's risky. But more and more, we're seeing organizations where that's not necessarily a risk. It's something that's rewarded.
What you're talking about leadership makes sense to me, but I imagine it goes over a lot better in the DOD environments or the VA environment, potentially, where you have folks that have experience in the military rather than some of the other agencies that aren't used to taking orders that specifically and that directly.
Well, I'm retired Army, so start there,
Francis. And it shows.
Start there. It does. It does start easier in those environments. I think it goes easier in environments where there is a little bit of an understanding of the SOP. How do we do things? But, you know, it's not just VA and DOD that have their act together. We've got a lot of great places to work in the federal government today. And we're seeing more and more with this new crop that we're talking about. You know, guess what? When you have a huge depletion of your workforce and you bring in a new workforce and you're training them in a common approach, suddenly you have a common lexicon. It's easier to get things done then. I'm looking forward to the next 36 to 48 months as this new crop gets their feet under them. And they're really beginning to put their stamp on how we do business.
And I'm certainly not implying that just because people won't follow orders that they're somehow deficient. But it is a different cultural mindset that is sometimes hard to get people to get on board with. You talked about a concept there that I want to come back to when we come back from the break. And that is the idea of replicability, which is something we don't hear a lot of yet. And I am starting to see a little bit more of it. I want to explore that with you when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Kimberly Hayes of Ambit Group on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
When lives are at stake, you need technology you can count on. FLIR Systems' legacy of life-saving thermal imaging sensors continues through their offering of full-spectrum chemical, biological, radiation, and explosive threat detection systems and beyond-the-fence perimeter security solutions. Visit FLIR.com to learn more. FLIR Systems, because it's not just your job, it's your life.
Are you looking for a professional master's degree that will take your career to the next level? The University of Maryland's Master's in Applied Economics can help you gain a valuable professional advantage and expand your career opportunities. Earn your Master's in Applied Economics from the University of Maryland. The application deadline for fall semester is June 1st, so apply now at masters.econ.umd.edu. That's masters.econ.umd.edu.
GSA executives responsible for the $800,000 Las Vegas conference scandal answered to Congress this week in four different hearings. Called to the Hill are former GSA Administrator Martha Johnson, former PBS Commissioner Bob Peck, and the person who exposed it all, Inspector General Brian Miller. Federal News Radio keeps you up to date on how this story unfolds at federalnewsradio.com, search term GSA Shakeup, and follow us on Twitter at Fed News Radio.
Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Kimberly Hayes of Ambit Group is my guest on Industry Chatter today. We talked about replicability before, and one of the things, as I mentioned during the break, that I always try to get at when I'm talking to people about programs in government is, how much of this could somebody at another agency pick up and use for a similar application, just plug it in and run with it? Normally, folks are not sure how to answer that question. That's understandable, because how do you know exactly what somebody in another agency is going to try to do? But I like the idea of planting that in other people's minds, because I think we're starting to see a lot more of it. Stephen Van Roekel, with the idea behind FedRAMP and some of the other things, is here's a solution that anybody can use, and we've already kind of molded this into something that would fit for everybody.
Correct.
What's the holdup in many cases, do you think, for agencies being receptive to that and being willing? Everybody kind of says they want to do it and they like the idea, and yet when it comes down to brass tacks, everybody still kind of tends to wander off in their own direction.
I think there are enclaves of it in most agencies, though. You know, the things that we're talking about aren't rocket science. They're process. You know, you joked with me, the Army side of it, the SOP. Well, guess what? There's a reason there's an SOP. If I'm going into battle, I really don't want to have to think about whether or not you know what to do when you're supposed to do it. I need to be focused on what I'm supposed to do. I think oftentimes people are a little afraid of clear roles and responsibilities. And I don't think that's just to the federal agencies. I think it's people in general. So strong leaders come in and they make the roles and responsibilities and the expectations clear and easily understood. It's not, you don't have to guess at what you're supposed to do. You know from day one. Well, if you're working on an integrated project team and your charter is clearly defined and it says what you're going to do by when and what support you'll provide, it gets a lot easier to go to work every day and be sure you're hitting your mark. And in a world where perhaps if you're a federal employee and you're expected to manage four or five programs with very little help in some cases, it's a lot easier if you know what exactly it is that you're doing on each of those five programs. That's the type of common sense, bottoms-up, top-down leadership that I'm beginning to see more and more in agencies. And, you know, I see it more and more in companies as well. I'll tell you, as a small business, there is no way for us to have scaled and grown at the rate that we are without replicability, without clear and easily understood roles and responsibilities, without checking on each other. And we're seeing that more in agencies. I do think it's something that can be picked up, and I don't think it has to be mandated, Francis. I think the more you see successes and the more programs like this get out and say, wait a minute, this isn't that hard to do. You can do this. You'll see it move along, and I see it in groundswells. You know, yes, at VA a few years ago when the idea of the IPTs came out, people fought it tooth and nail. It's part of the culture now, and leadership drove that.
I've never been able to figure that out about government either, because it strikes me the human nature is to look at your neighbor, and if your neighbor is doing something and succeeding, you go, well, I'll just do exactly the same thing that Kim is doing because it seems to be working pretty good for her. And yet we don't see a lot of that. We see a lot of recreation of process and recreation of policy, and let's start a working group to look at this issue that every other agency, including mine, has looked at some point in time and had a working group and blah, 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 the whole thing.
We're seeing it more and more. Strategic sourcing is a great example. If you begin to look at how agencies are using strategic sourcing to move ahead, I think that there was a time when the incentives might not have been there to collaborate quite as heavily. You know, everyone's budget's being decimated now. It's a lot easier if you can collaborate and find out how to save your money quickly. We talked earlier, too, and I think it's – industry is an integral part of how the federal government operates. We're a partner, and I think it's important for us to use the footprints that we have to not be quite so territorial. What is it that we've done here that might work well for you? How can we help you to collaborate? I often think it's less about resistance to collaboration and more about lack of time to see what other people are doing. I mean, frankly, most of my clients are working 16 to 18 hours a day. They're on 7 days a week. They're on weekends, nights, and holidays, and they're dealing with that same inbox. I don't think they have a lot of time to reach out and see what else is going on.
And they're focused on whatever the business is that's at hand.
Yes.
They don't have any time, it doesn't seem to me, to think about where am I going to be, where is my team going to be a year from now or 2 years from now or 5 years from now, and then they wind up. Before they know it, they're in front of a committee somewhere.
Well, and events like ELC, which we just saw each other at, you know, those are the opportunities for us to share those things with others. Those are the opportunities for executive development. We really don't want our executives buried heads down. That's not going to get us efficient government. We need to be able to support them and help them understand what their peers are doing. And I think those collaborative opportunities are so critical to breaking down that stereotype of, well, they're all going to do their own thing. I bet more and more, if they had a little help with that collaboration, they might not do their own thing quite so much.
My guest on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio 1500 AM is Kimberly Hayes of the Ambit Group, and we will wrap up our conversation in a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Military families make great sacrifices so that we can be safe, secure, and free. That's why we at United Health Military and Veteran Services are so honored to have been selected to serve families in the TRICARE West region starting in April 2013. United Healthcare serves over 78 million Americans nationwide. We have the experience and expertise to make healthcare better for our servicemen and women and their families. United Healthcare's expansive network provides access to hundreds of thousands of physicians and specialists. We focus on making it possible for healthcare teams to work together and share important information about your care. And at United Healthcare, we use innovative technologies to make sure you get the right care from the right doctor for your needs. Military families help keep us safe. So at United Healthcare, helping military families isn't just a job, it's an honor. To learn more, visit UnitedHealthMilitary.com.
Hey kids, I'm Les Stroud, a.k.a. Survivor Man, and I invite you to enter the Get to Know contest.
Create artwork, writing, photos, videos, or music celebrating your wild neighbors. Get outdoors, get creative, and you could win some wild prizes, including having your work published in the Get to Know contest calendar. Enter by July 16th at gettoknow.ca. That's gettoknow.ca.
The Get to Know contest. More info at gettoknow.ca.
Creating the United States, a Library of Congress exhibition about the nation's founding documents, will close on Saturday, May 5th. This must-see exhibition centers on the creation of the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, and the Bill of Rights. The exhibition is free and open to the public, 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Saturday in the library's Thomas Jefferson Building at 10 First Street Southeast, Washington, D.C. Don't miss it. For more information, visit loc.gov.
The Federal Drive is sponsored by Learning Tree International.
Learning Tree International is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government. They provide high-quality instructor-led IT and management training to government professionals and contractors at all levels. Call 1-800-THE-TREE or enroll today at learningtree.com/gov. That's learningtree.com/gov.
The Federal Drive, brought to you by Learning Tree International, airs weekday mornings from 6 to 10 and online at federalnewsradio.com.
Federal News Radio supports GuideTech's Shared IT Services Summit May 20th through 22nd in Baltimore. The summit will focus on comprehensive examples of government agencies delivering and using shared IT services, and will feature presentations from government IT visionaries such as U.S. CIO Stephen Van Roekel, DHS CIO Richard Spires, and many more. Registration is open to government and industry IT executives. Government employees attend for free, so sign up now at guidetech.org.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Just a few minutes left with Kimberly Hayes of the Ambit Group. And one of the threads throughout our entire conversation, something you've said a number of times, is none of this stuff is rocket science. A lot of this stuff is common sense. You've used those terms on a number of different occasions in a number of different contexts. Do we try to make it complicated on purpose sometimes, or do we just maybe not think about it in terms of let's just find a simple solution? What holds us back? This is a much more existential question than you probably expected to answer on a radio show. But it's that's what I wonder about, because you're not the only person that says that. I hear that all the time, and yet we still see these things turned into these really complicated things.
The work that we do is complex.
Yes.
Consolidating a data center is not an easy thing to do. Determining the enterprise architecture of a multi-toned organization is not an easy thing to do. So it's not that the work is simple, but the simple aspect are the good foundations of management. You know, you asked me in the beginning, what is Ambit Group? We're a management consultancy. This should come naturally to us.
you better know how to do this.
I better know how to do this, or we're in trouble. But, you know, Francis, it's about being clear. It's about having processes and procedures that fit. Guess what? You really don't want a 55-page document to go through every time you need to make a simple decision. You know, we talk about governance, for example. Sure, we do a lot of work around governance, but we do a lot of work around making governance manageable, making it something that you can easily work within. I think the common sense part of it is the common sense part of it is thinking clearly every day about what has to be accomplished and not getting tangled up in a lot of the drama of all the whys. Sometimes you just need to sit back and say, okay, I have to drive from here to there. I'm going to start the car. I'm going to make sure there's gas in it. I'm going to drive from here to there. And there's going to be stuff along the way, but I'm not going to let myself get too distracted by it. I'm going to stay focused on my end game. It's very hard to do that when you're being peppered from a million sources. And when we talk about those IPTs and that partnership between industry and government, you know, someone has to be focused on the noise and someone has to be focused on where you're going. And it's okay to have your teams take those different roles, but you got to be clear on who owns which one of them.
That's another human nature thing, though, mm-hmm. to be able to just stay in your lane and do what it is that you need to do because you know the person in the next lane is going to be doing the same thing.
But don't you think that really good managers keep their people in their lanes? They make it clear where their lane's going. They make it clear what their goal is and where they have to get to. But when all the lanes start to get fuzzy, really strong managers come in and they clear the lanes up. And those are the organizations that we see getting the awards, and those are the teams that are driving 11 and 12 and 30 and $40 million out of projects. And those are the contractors who are running teams who do that as well. They're clear. And I think that is the common sense part of it.
And that destination's always clear, too.
It's always clear. You have to know where you're going, and you got to measure it. Got to be willing to say we're there or we're not.
We have about a minute left. What do you see happening that is good for us to think, to look forward to in the next year, 2 years, 5 years on the landscape? You alluded earlier to the fact you're excited about what you're seeing as far as the people you're dealing with in government.
We're seeing a much more willingness to have an open dialogue. We're seeing an openness to say, tell me what's going well and what's not, and I'm not going to beat you up if you do it. Be my partner in this. We're seeing young people who are coming in and being taught that that's acceptable, that this does not need to be an adversarial relationship, that we're all partnering in something to move it forward. So are we seeing more industry days on RFIs and RFPs? Yes. Awesome. Let's talk about it. Are we getting a chance to provide feedback and comment? Absolutely. But, you know, ultimately, I think what we're doing is we're beginning to build connective tissue between industry and government in a way that we're all sharing a common goal.
It's great to see you, as always, Kim. Thank you very much for coming and being on the program today. Kimberly Hayes is president and co-founder of the Ambit Group, my guest on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This conversation will be archived online later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Hour number two of the program is right around the corner on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.